Case number 20-5105, Jessica Jones v. David Wiseman. Or arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Ashley Satterfield for the appellant.
Good afternoon. May it please the court.
Good afternoon.
My name is Ashley Satterfield, and I represent plaintiff appellant Jessica Jones. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Very well.
This case arises out of an automobile collision that occurred in 2017 in Memphis, Tennessee. The defendant, David Wiseman, was driving an 18-wheeler truck and made a right turn from the left turning lane, striking plaintiff's vehicle. As a result, the plaintiff appellant incurred injuries for which she sued. At issue on appeal, appellant raises the trial court's exclusion of any testimony or mention of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. And second, the second issue on appeal is the trial court's denial of plaintiff's motion for a new trial as a result of that improper exclusion of any mention of the regulations. It is undisputed that at the time of the accident that David Wiseman was driving a commercial vehicle, that he had a commercial driver's license, and that he was required to abide by the rules and regulations provided in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Defendant filed a motion for limine to exclude any mention of those regulations, and the trial court granted that motion in limine. The basis for that motion in limine, the defendant argued that the regulations were not relevant because they did not create a heightened standard of care. Because the applicable standard of care was governed by Tennessee law, and because they did not create a heightened standard of care, they should be excluded. The trial court granted defendant's motion in limine, and that was clearly erroneous because the fact that the regulations don't create a heightened standard of care do not make them irrelevant or inadmissible. Plaintiff conceded that the applicable standard of care is that which is provided for in Tennessee law. But plaintiff was not seeking to have this testimony admitted for the purpose of establishing a heightened standard of law for truck drivers. Plaintiff was not seeking to create a truck driving standard of care. Plaintiff sought to have this testimony admitted because it was relevant and goes to how one is able to determine whether Mr. Wiseman's conduct and actions were that of a reasonable and prudent person under the specific circumstances. The point that plaintiff wants to make is illustrated best by a Sixth Circuit case, Shanklin versus Norfolk Railroad, because there's a distinction between having testimony admitted for the purpose of establishing a legal standard of care versus having this testimony admitted because it goes to issues like notice and knowledge and how one determines what a reasonable person would do under the circumstances. Negligence consists of a failure to do what a reasonable and ordinarily prudent person would do under the same or similar circumstances. In Shanklin v. Norfolk Railroad, that case involved a train accident. A train collided with a vehicle. At the trial court level, there was an issue over the admissibility of...
I'm sorry, counselor. Is that a case that was cited in your brief? Because I don't see it.
It was not.
Is it a Tennessee? Is it a case applying Tennessee law or is it a federal?
It's a federal Sixth Circuit case.
What state Tennessee law is applied? That's what Judge Nelbandian's asking.
I'm sorry. I didn't...
Is it a diversity case that was applying Tennessee law?
I do not have that answer. I should, but I do not. But the analysis in that case is applicable to what is going on here.
Counselor, I guess I don't disagree with the general notion that sometimes regs and safety regs are relevant, even if they don't establish a standard of care, even if it's not a negligence per se case. But don't we need guidance from the Tennessee courts on exactly how that gets done? And I'm just struggling to see from your brief or your argument where we've got Tennessee law on this issue.
Well, under Tennessee law, in determining negligence, you're always going to look at what a reasonable and ordinarily prudent person would do under the same or similar circumstances. The regulations and what is found in sort of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act manuals provides important context and circumstances for determining what would be reasonable for that individual to do. If jurors decide negligent cases in light of their knowledge of how a reasonable person would act under the circumstances, most jurors are not going to have a significant knowledge about what is reasonable and ordinary for a person to do when maneuvering.
Well, let me ask you a question then about that. So let's go to that specific point. I didn't see anything in those regulations specifically talking about making a turn, making a right turn from the left lane. What is it specifically in those regs that would have been relevant in this case?
So there are two regulations that are relevant, and it's not simply just the regulations, but what the regulations provide for as far as, the Reg 383.131 requires state to provide CDL applicants with a Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act approved training manual. The manual that would have been at issue here and that we would have elicited testimony about was the Mississippi CDL manual that had to be approved under the Federal Motor Safety Carriers Act. And that manual provides specific instructions on how one should make a right turn and particular issues that arise given the size of the vehicles, about how you need to be close to the curb and perform that turn in a certain manner, because if you do not, another driver may attempt to pass you on the right.
And so I'm confused. That reg talks about a requirement that states provide certain manuals. Am I correct?
Right, that are approved by.
So is it the reg that would need to have come into evidence, or is it actually the manual itself that would have been relevant?
I believe it's both. And the line of the intended testimony was the regulation which the defendant had testified to that he was familiar with, that he was required to abide by, and that guided his actions, those regulations provided for this manual. And that is evidence in some of the arguments that defendant makes and talks about the exclusion of the CDL manual and that information, but that stems from the testimony that would have been elicited starting from the point of discussing those regulations and his knowledge of those regulations, which he testified that he was aware of and was required to abide by.
Ms. Satterfield, did I misunderstand you? Did you say something about a Mississippi manual?
The CDL manual that would have been approved by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act. Yes. Because Mr. Wiseman had a Mississippi CDL license.
The accident occurred in Tennessee.
Yes.
Okay. But his license was a Mississippi license?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. Okay. May I continue?
Yes.
Sorry. In that Norfolk case, they were the court allowed the Federal Highway Administration's handbooks and manuals to be admitted. The defendant in that case argued that they should not be admitted because they did not create a legal standard of care. The plaintiff responded that they would concede that point, but that the handbook was necessary or was relevant because it was used by railroads to understand site distances and then therefore help to demonstrate what the railroad was aware of, how they conducted their actions. The district court admitted all of that evidence for the specific and limited purpose of showing notice of knowledge and restricted the evidence to its proper scope, which is what should have and could have been done here.
What if the evidence is relevant? District court has wide discretion to decide whether evidence that's relevant has the potential to confuse the jury to such an extent that it should be excluded. What about that aspect of the district court ruling?
So the notes from Federal Rule of Evidence 403 provide that when you're making a consideration as to unfair prejudice, that consideration should be given to the effectiveness of a limiting instruction. And the trial court here did not give any consideration to that fact. The concern over the prejudice that the court was concerned about could have been effectively addressed through a limiting instruction. And the evidence here was so probative that failure to do so greatly prejudiced the plaintiff. The facts weighed actually in favor of the plaintiff on that analysis, particularly because a limiting instruction could be given.
But you wanted to say something about how your client's proofs were prejudiced and why this wasn't simply rather harmless. I would imagine your opposing counsel is going to bring that up in his argument.
So the jury returned a verdict allocating 50% fault to the defendant, which meant that there was a mere 1% difference. If the verdict had shown a 1% difference, the plaintiff could have recovered for her injuries. When we look at the allocation of fault in this case, information that goes to whether or not Mr. Wiseman's actions were reasonable for a person driving a 26,000 pound vehicle go exactly to that issue. And given the 50% allocation, this kind of information was material and useful and could have swayed their determination. Because it goes to the facts that a jury would be considering when determining were the actions reasonable, what is the allocation of fault, because they did find him negligent. There was only a 1% difference would have made the chance, and that's why this is not harmless error.
All right. Anything further?
I just want to make one quick point that the restatement of torts also supports the argument that you can know about an actor's skills that can be considered. They just provide a circumstance for the jury to consider without changing the standard of care.
All right. I see that you're out of time. We'll hear from Mr. Mansfield.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Michael Mansfield. I represent the defendant, Mr. Wiseman, in this case. It's great to be in your court today. I'm sorry that it's virtual. I would love to be in Cincinnati with you guys, but I appreciate you hosting it this way so we can get this done. You guys are, it's a great thing that we can still at least get something done during this time.
Well, thank you.
With regard to this case, to begin, I don't know how to respond to the arguments that Ms. Satterfield made regarding the railroad case, because as you said just now, Babian, that wasn't cited in her brief. I've not heard of that case. I didn't get the cite while she was arguing, so I have no idea if what she's representing to the court with that case.
Do you agree, though, generally that safety rules and code provisions and other things can be relevant in tort cases, even if they are not negligence per se cases? I mean, isn't that generally the case?
I really don't think so, Your Honor. I've not researched that particular issue, but just as in this case, if you open up the field to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, which is what the plaintiff's attorney asked my client about in his deposition. This is a copy of them. And they were only referring to, they did not refer to in their complaint or any time during the deposition, a specific rule that applied to this case in any way. They simply, they referred to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations and essentially established, as the district court noted in its order, that my client was familiar with and had to comply with whatever regulations are in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations book. Then they wanted to bring this, which is, I don't know the exact number of pages, but nearly 1,000 pages that you could just, if you said the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations can come in just without providing a standard of care because they might be relevant to something, and you don't put a specific reason for it to be in the case providing a standard of care, it's chaos. and confusion, just as in this case.
No, just understand, make sure I'm not misunderstanding. Your opposing counsel, they weren't going to argue that that entire book of regulations were violated, were they? Weren't there just two or three or a few regulations or points in there that they wanted to present to the jury, or am I wrong about that?
I think that you may or may not be wrong, because they didn't present their case to the jury in that manner. So I don't know exactly what they would do, but the background behind all
that. They didn't present it at all because the judge wouldn't let them.
Agreed. But the background to your to my answer to your question, Judge, is when they filed the complaint, there was no reference to any statutory violation under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. There were references in their complaint, negligence per se allegations with regard to violations of Tennessee state law. The plaintiff's attorneys took my client's deposition and during that had a long discussion about the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Well, they still had not amended their complaint, and there was no reference during the deposition to a particular regulation that applied. So as trial approached, I went ahead and filed a motion in limine to preclude any evidence relating to that for the reasons I said earlier. If you open up that 1,000-page book and just say that they can come in with no notice, then it's going to be chaos. They can pick out anything and no telling. Then, well, in response to that...
Wait a minute. I thought Ms. Satterfield was just talking about a regulation pertaining to how a particular kind of turn is executed by the vehicle. And now you're talking about this whole 1,000-page book of regulations. There's a disconnect here. Either she was doing more wanting to use that book of regulations more than she's explained, or you're attributing something to her or to your opposing counsel that just didn't take place.
Well, Your Honor, back to giving you the backstory behind all this, because I understand that it is confusing. So I filed my motion in limine to exclude any reference to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. In response to that was the very first time, 2 weeks before trial, that the plaintiff filed a response to that and indicated that there were these four regulations that they felt were applicable. That's the first time we knew 2 weeks before trial what they were trying to do. And then it turns out,
I'm sorry. That was in response to the footnote in the court's ruling, right? That kind of invited them to, hey, if you have a specific reg that you're talking about, you might want to point it out, and then we can talk about whether it's relevant. I mean, is that what was, I assume they just were responding to what the court was suggesting in that ruling, right?
True, exactly.
There was a negligence per se claim in the complaint, or there's not?
There is, but it only dealt with Tennessee state statutes, the state statutes that the court ultimately found provided the rule and the standard for decision in this case. There was no mention of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations anywhere in the complaint, and there never was a motion to amend. The only time that the plaintiffs
I take their argument is not they're basing the claim itself on the regs. I mean, I don't know why you would have to plead or put the regs in a complaint if you don't have a claim itself. I think they're just suggesting that they're relevant. Again, we can go back and forth on that, but I don't understand them to be making like a negligence per se claim for violation of the regs. Am I wrong about that?
I believe you are, Your Honor, because in their response and then in Ms. Satterfield's argument just now, if you'll notice, there's an old movie called Gaslight, where someone, the husband turns the lights down in his wife's house and she's going crazy over it. And he keeps telling her that everything's fine, but she knows something's wrong. And it seems to be a disconnect, just like there is here. That's what's happening here. They are saying the plaintiffs are saying we're not saying that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations.
In the Gaslight movie, they try to persuade the wife that she's crazy. You're not suggesting your opposing counsel is doing anything like that, are you?
Not in a literal sense, Your Honor. No, I'm not. But in a metaphorical sense, yes, because the plaintiffs continue to say that we realize that the Tennessee state law provides the standards for decision. So we're not going to say this is a standard. We're just going to say that we're going to put in the Mississippi commercial driver's license testing study guide that tells a driver how to make a left turn and exactly how to check his mirrors and exactly how to do that. And we're going to tell the jury that this is how he's exactly supposed to do it. But that's not a standard, though, because we know that doesn't provide the standard for decision. And so that's how can you do that? That would confuse utterly the jury when you tell when the plaintiff's lawyer stand up and say this Mississippi commercial driver's testing book study guide says you have to make a right hand turn in this method. You have to check your mirrors in this way.
Can I interrupt you at this point, Mr. Mansfield? I want to make sure I understand what's going on here. So the regs were first generally at issue, you understood, through a deposition.
Only through the deposition, not through
right. The in general. But at some point, you were aware that the plaintiffs were seeking admission of four specific regulations, right?
After the district court invited that motion in limine in response
okay,
to our
okay. And so then the district court ruled on that motion. And going forward, you all knew that they were not going to be admissible. Is that right?
True.
Now, I don't think this study guide would be encompassed within the definition of regulation. So where does it come into the picture in today's argument, or was that at issue in the district court? Can you help us on knowing how that got involved?
I don't think that it's said in writing anywhere, but during the oral arguments before the district court, the plaintiffs revealed what their plan was with all this. They were going to take, if they could get the district court to say that the federal motor carrier safety regulations, specifically 383.111, that sets forth these 20 criteria that a driver's testing manual has to cover for a state to comply with its CDL requirements. If they could get the court to say that regulation applied, then they were planning on starting to quote from the Mississippi Commercial Driver's License Study Guide. Because
was this all handled in connection with the pretrial conference and order, or would this be found in the trial transcript?
It was in the pretrial order conference, the pretrial conference, because the court.
And was the ruling encompassed in the pretrial order?
Your Honor, I don't know if it was specifically, I don't know if the driver's license testing study guide was referenced in the actual written order. I don't know if that made it into the written order, but it was addressed by the court at the pretrial conference. And so that's where they were headed. And just as Ms. Satterfield said, they were planning to use a Mississippi driver's license, commercial driver's license study guide to tell the jury that this is how a commercial driver is supposed to make a right-hand turn. This is how how the driver is supposed to check his mirrors. This is how this driver is supposed to do whatever. But that's not a standard, jury. The standard is only Tennessee law. We're just telling you all of this as background. That's
the primary objective I keep hearing to this these items of evidence is that they would confuse the jury. I'm not sure why the introduction of those few items would confuse the jury. And if the court thought they would be confusing, could give a limiting instruction. The other thing is that the jury could attach what weight they wanted to these regulations. Why would it have been so detrimental or confusing to have admitted these things?
I tried my best to explain my position in that regard just through my last.
Now you started waving this big book of 1,000 pages and all that, which was more misleading than helpful.
Well, I don't mean to mislead the court. I think that the plaintiffs actually, through their argument, saying that we aren't going to tell the jury that these 20 items that the state is required to put in their driver's testing, commercial driver's test, and we're going to tell the jury that this driver's testing study guide does not set the standard, but yet all they're going to argue about is how the drivers didn't meet the standard in this commercial driver's testing guide. and then you get a jury instruction that only has Tennessee law that has none of that in it. I don't see how myself that that could be anything other than confusing. And the district court agreed with that. And, you know, the district court's rulings were clear, concise, absolutely legally correct. They should be affirmed in this case, even if these were even relevant in any way, because they're not relevant. As Judge Nalbandian, you pointed out earlier, they don't have any relevance to what a driver does. This is for the state conducting their driver's testing. This is for saying that a company should tell its driver, you are supposed to follow all the motor carrier regulations, say drug testing, log books, things of that nature. They don't have anything to do with how to make a right-hand turn or a left-hand turn. There's nothing in the federal motor carrier regulations that address a driver's, the manner in which he checks his mirrors or makes a right-hand turn or approaches an intersection. That only comes through where the plaintiffs were wanting to bring in the Mississippi State study guide for a CDL license test and present that to the jury as how someone is supposed to do something, and then say, okay, Tennessee law says you're supposed to pull up in the intersection and do X, but this Mississippi State study guide gives the real law, but don't you? And so you can use Mississippi's law to furnish the rule of decision under the Tennessee jury instruction.
Was there any testimony? Was there any expert testimony? I take it no.
Not regarding the federal motor carrier safety regulations. No, there was not.
Well, no, regarding the standard of care or how to make a right turn or what a truck driver, a reasonable commercial truck driver would do.
No, there was no expert testimony because the jury instructions in Tennessee common law and statutes gave the rule of standard for decision.
Okay. Was there anything at trial about the you mentioned Tennessee law about or in the instructions about what does Tennessee law have something about truck drivers making. Was any of that specifically in the record, or did any of that come out of trial?
Yes, that's in the jury instructions, Your Honor. The Tennessee State jury instructions clearly follow and track the Tennessee statutory rules of the road, and the manner of making a right-hand turn approaching an intersection was in the jury instructions, was litigated, and was sent back to the jury to base their decision upon.
Is that specific I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish up.
Is that specific to trucks or is that just general?
No, it's general. It's the general law. Under the Parks case, it follows the Parks case. It says if the federal motor carrier safety regulations do not have a specific thing that someone has to follow, then state law controls. And that's exactly what happened. And the jury was instructed on general Tennessee law applying to motors.
Okay, thank you.
Really quickly, Mr. Mansfield, I have managed to go back and locate the district court's order denying the plaintiff's renewed motion for judgment as a matter of law and denying plaintiff's motion for new trial. And in that document, the district court goes back, I believe, through the entire history of plaintiff's efforts to offer this evidence and exactly what the history, the sequence of events, and the basis for both the district court's pretrial and post-trial rulings. And would you agree that's the document we need to look at in order to properly review the district court's decision? We've sort of been all over the place here in the argument. Is that, are we on the same page about that?
Yes, Your Honor, that, and if the court had access to the transcript of the argument at the pretrial conference.
Was a record made of the pretrial? Did you have a court reporter present for the pretrial conference?
The court's court reporter was there, but I did not have a separate court reporter available.
Well, I mean, sometimes those pretrial conferences are not done on the record. And I just was asking whether this one was or not.
Yes, Your Honor, it was on the record. I'm not sure if it was transcribed or what happened to
it. Well, and it's not a part of the record. It's not part of the record on appeal as far as I know.
We have a transcript, though, that where the court has made a ruling. I'm looking at it. It says, like, for example, he says, but referencing the regulations themselves, I think, will only add to the confusion of the jury. So I'm granting defendant's motion and denying that we have, that's page ID 2986.
Okay.
That's the transcript you're talking about.
So that's the pretrial. Okay. I'm sorry. I just didn't see. Either didn't see that or forgot.
I think we have it. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. And Ms. Satterfield, did you reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Please go ahead.
We are asking the court to reverse the trial court's decision to exclude the evidence that we've been discussing today and to order a new trial. On the issue of what defendant or appellee's counsel was talking about referencing the Mississippi study guide, in plaintiff's motion in limine to include such testimony, the plaintiff identified the specific language in what was the CDL manual that had to be, that was mandated by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations, the exact important section that they wanted to ultimately question the defendant on. And that had to do with just guidance as to things that need to be considered when making a, when a truck is making a right turn and things that need to be considered.
Ms. Satterfield, so it is the study guide that you really wanted to get into, correct?
It's both. It is both.
Okay. Well, with respect to the study guide, why couldn't you simply have taken the wisdom that the study guide imparted and without identifying the source and used it to help you in the cross-examination of Mr. Wiseman? You know, I mean, you could have sought his agreement that these things were important and then, you know, have made whatever points you wanted to make about how, whether in argument or otherwise, about why the driving he exhibited on the occasion of the accident did not conform with that advice.
I believe that that kind of questioning and testimony was ultimately precluded at trial. There were objections made, I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe when plaintiff's counsel was attempting to go down that road, there were objections made that this was just an attempt to get out of the order that the judge had entered.
So well, perhaps if the study guide was the study guide referenced.
I do not know.
I'm suggesting that you might have taken information from the study guide and used it to your benefit without referencing the study guide. You don't know.
I do not know, Your Honor. I just want to say that the information that was sought to be included was relevant and goes to how a jury member is going to be able to determine whether this person's actions is reasonable for an ordinary reasonable person driving a truck. That context is critical and important to making those determinations, and any concern of prejudice could have been dealt with through a limiting instruction. And the very nature of the 1% difference in the allocation of fault establishes that this was not harmless error. We ask that you overturn the trial court's order, decision and order a new trial. Thank you.
All right, the argument is concluded, and we certainly thank both of you for your arguments. The case is submitted.